All right, so starting at the top of Kuf, yesterday we left off with the stories about if you're a mumchev to see coins, and then you are not accountable. If you see the coin, and you say it's a valid coin, and then you're found to be mistaken, technically you're not accountable as long as you're an expert, like the super money changers of Danko and Yitzur. Although, we saw that the case with Rabbi Chia, who decided to do at least name Meishurta Din, and still exchange the coin. So Gemara just brought a pasuk to show that there is such an aspect, or such a din of Lisnim Meishurta Din, acting within the, not just within the confines of Halacha, but going beyond the confines of Halacha to rectify the situation. Tosos suggested that Lisnim Meishurta Din will only apply if others would be Chayav in such an instance, and you are Pasur. So to act Lisnim Meishurta Din, to be Mechayav yourself would be worthwhile. Although Tosfos rejects that, and he says he doesn't think that that's the way to read it, that the Sneer Shur Tadim will even apply when others are patur, and that there's still an aspect of going beyond the call, or beyond the duty that is expected of you. Alright, Rish Lakish, Akhale Dinar the Rabbi Elazar. Rish Lakish showed the coin to Rabbi Elazar. Amar Maliyahu. He says, it's a good coin. Amale Chazei de Alakha Samchina. He says, I'm relying on you. I mean, that it's not, you should know that I'm relying on you in terms of the validity of this coin. He says, Amalek, Yisamakalai, by the memra. So he says, what does it mean that you're relying on me? Right? He says, you know, that means, or what you're suggesting is that if we find out that this coin is not good currency, that you're going to come back and force me to swap out the coin for a good coin. V'ha'at hudamart. Rabbi Meir, he says, aren't you the one or the that suggests that the position of Rabbi Meir is the one who allows you to collect in such an instance because he is Dan Dine de Garmi? Because over here, in this instance, where the reason that he would be Chayav, or the reason to assume that the Dayan would be on the hook here, is because of Dine de Garmi. He didn't physically do anything. He didn't actively be a dying and do any damage to this individual. It's through his dibur, through his psak, or over here it's not even a psak alofa, through his determination that this is a valid coin, right there he causes him a loss because he accepts the coin and now he's not able to spend the coin. Now he's not able to spend the coin, he causes a loss. But it's an indirect loss. It's almost a grumma, but more a directed grumma, so it's a garmi. So you're only going to be chayav to replace such a coin if you believe that when it comes to din de garmi that you are chayav. And that's only according to Rabbi Meir. So aren't you the one who suggested that this whole possibility of collecting here is only according to Rabbi Meir that Dan Din de Garmi? And my lab.
Maybe it would be
possibility of maybe passing like Rabbi Meir, which Gemara is going to ask in 1 second.
Is it? Can't
volunteer. Right, so that's exactly the answer. So I was given the answer, which is that here, Rish Lakish is putting him on the hook and saying, you are obligated to pay me back. You can't obligate someone to act on the Shazin. Right, so that, he's asking him, he's telling him, you're now on the hook.
Used to we have cases in the Shas that Chachamim did force other Chachamim.
Right, so actually Chachamim held themselves to higher standards, even though it wasn't wrong. But they held themselves to higher standards, but it's still a voluntary act. You can't force them, you can't impose upon them. That's a chiyuv. Now, the Gemara says, my lab.
Was there some kind of gold standard? That's not the rule that is wrong. It just means that he knows better than Chenvani down the street. Chenvani's not
right. So the assumption is that when he goes to ask him, that it's going to be, he's telling him that this is good currency that will spend anywhere, that people will accept this as valid currency. And the invalidity, or the lack of it being a country, is not because people won't accept it, it's because the tzura is not perfect, or doesn't look like the coins
that
they
used to flake off. The edges used to break off. It was
right.
Very hard to keep track of that.
Alright, so that's another thing with weight. If the weight is diminished, whether it's considered a coin here, although from yesterday's Gemara, it sounds like it's an image issue that they're changing over coins, rather than just, because they're really experts, then the breaking of the coin, they should have known about. That is something they know about. What is an area of currency that they wouldn't know about is when the coins switch. Right, when they switch over currencies or they switch over images on the currencies, there's an area where they need some more time to be a real expert in it. So then when they make a declaration, even though they're doing it out of the best knowledge that they have, that they're still considered possibly, they're patur, in general they're patur. He's not on the hook.
So the gold standard is really just the community standard of who's going to accept these, the people are generally going to accept
the right. So now it says, my lab, Rabbi Meir, velo tzvir lankavadei. So what does it mean? That you, when you say that Dan Dine de Garmim is Rabbi Meir's opinion, it sounds like you believe that's Rabbi Meir is the Dat Yachid, And we don't hold like him. We don't pass on like Rabbi Meir because Chachamim disagree. I'm like, look, Rabbi Meir, Risvir Lan Kavate. No, that is Rabbi Meir, and I pass on like Rabbi Meir. So I will be Dan Dine Digarmi. If I'm Dan Dine Digarmi, then you're on the hook for that coin that you say to me, or say to me is good or valid. And if I go now and it's invalid coin, you're going to be on the hook for my acceptance of this coin, and now that I can't use it. So hi, Rabbi Meir. Where do we see that Rabbi Meir is the author of this position that Dan Dine Digarmi? Even Rabbi Meir, if it's Rabbi Meir, that's not in the Mishnah. Dan et adin, zika et achayav, chayev et azakai. She passed in a din, and it was a mistaken din. He let someone who was chayav go, you know, without payment. He was mechayev someone who was not obligated in payment. Timei et atahor, made them that was tahor tamei, or tiher et atamei, or he says them that was tamei with tahor. Mash asa atzui, vishalim mi beito. Whatever is done, and he's got to pay out of his house. So we don't go back and have him reverse the Sak halacha, right? We just say that Sak halacha stands, and then he's got to compensate out of his hand for the monetary loss that he caused.
Right. So high
ismar law. So there we said this. I'm reblah. I'm a rab. But who should not tell? But not on biyad. So this can't be the position of Rabbi Meir because this is in Dan Dine Digarmi. Because Rabbi Law, I'm a rab, qualified that mishnah and said that mishnah where the dayan is chayav is only when the dayan himself actively by hand caused the losses over here. It wasn't even a garmika of, it was directed loss. So what's Natan Natim and Natan Bayad? If you look at Rashi, Natan Natan Bayad, Vizike et Achayat, Shehelo Mashkon Lamalver. Right? The Malver was holding on to Mashkon, claro, Mimenu, Venatal Dayan, Lamashkon, Yakzir Lalover. And then he takes it out of the hand of the Lamalver physically and hands it to the Lover. Vichyev et Azakai, Natal Bayad Mamon Minan Nidba, Vishalim Lotover. So again, a case where he was mechayev et zakai, he takes the money from the nidba itself, takes the money out of his hand, and hands it to the toveya. The timei et tahor, what's the case of timei et tahor? Natal sheretz v'yadayim zarko alei. The tamo v'aday. Lagzik dvarav. So he says, this stuff is tamei, and I'll tell you, it's so tamei, we don't have any stuff anyway. He takes the sheretz and plops it right on top of the fruit. Now you know it's tamei for sure. That's my psak halacha. He does it v'yadayim. The tiyar et tamei is natal dayan l'perot tameyim. He takes these tmeyim, peros tmeyim, and he says, they're tahor. I'm so sure they're tahor, I'm going to mix them up with all the other fruits. I'm going to mix them up with your truma. Right? Irva mishar peros deisha sholo, vavile osem asebi adayim mazik. In all these cases, it's osem asebi adayim and it's mazik. And that, of course, everybody's going to agree in that instance that it's chayav. You can't prove anything here about the position of Rabbi Meir, because here we're not talking about dan dine de gami, we're talking about mazik bi yadayim. Mazik be a dime, of course, he's chayav in all of these instances. And that's why, we say in this case, he's gotta be shalemi beito. He's gotta pay out of his hand because we're not talking about dime dine digarmi. So now, the question, or in general, their question is, how do you know that, this sugya, or this is only according to Rabbi Meir? Right? Maybe, right, if you're nothing and nothing, yad, it can be even the Rabbana. That are not done in Dina Gamei. Right? So why?
Right.
Yeah, it is a Stam Mishnah. It doesn't have any author associated with it. So why is the Gemara assuming that it's Rabbi Meir? Now, once you know it's not Sabinatan Bayad, it really could be the Rabbanan as well. So Tosus comes up with a big Chiddush. That's what this big Tosus is about. He's trying to explain the cases here of Sabinatan Bayad. He suggests that anytime a Din, he basically suggests, his first suggestion is that Dibur is a Makta. That speaking or giving up psak halacha has the same qualifications as a ma'aseh. So if you do that, even the chachamim would agree that you're chayav in this instance when you give a psak halacha is a dibor. Right. That's exactly what it is. It's a ma'aseh based. And if you look down, if I'll read the line of Tosus down towards the like last third of this Tosus. He says, near the farish, the chol hecha de kam dina. Anytime a psak halacha is given, and that's it, afilu b'dibor, even with through just speaking, Chashiv k'maaseh v'lo k'grama. That is a maaseh, not a grama. U'mechayev afilu l'rabbanan. And you'll be chayav even according to the rabbanan. That's only when you have a din that stands, a psak halacha that stands. Any psak halacha that cannot be reversed. This means kam dina, an irreversible psak halacha, then the dibur comes like a maaseh. Aval hechad, the ilu have a kaman, have a hadar. But an instance where you give the psak halacha that could be reversed, like all these cases here. All these cases here were reversible dinim, because he gave money to the wrong party, they could take the money back and give it back to the original party with the tum'ah. If he doesn't do anything with it, he could just tell him it's tahor and not tameh. I mean, that there are ways to switch the psak without any monetary impact. If you can switch the psak, then that is not considered dibur k'maaseh. Only then, if you go ahead and do it b'yadayim. That's what the Gemara suggests over here. Since all these cases were reversible cases, the only way to make them irreversible is if he's not b'yad. When he did it maaseh b'yadayim, then he becomes a mazik. Like our case of showing the coin. That's all cases of grama. Then whatever you do afterwards, right, is all a grama from his psak halacha. Again, if he's no sin and son biyaz, because then and then biyadayim switches it. Right, then already he is doing mazik biyadayim because then he's physically changing the status of the item versus the psak halacha that could be reversed. It could be reversed. That's not, there's no finality to that psak in a sense. And therefore it's only a grum or a garmi. And then only according to Rabbi Meir would you be chayav and not according to the Rabbanan.
And that's different than Rashi, because Rashi is not looking at reversibility. He just says that he doesn't know the word is kamaisa, and therefore he
Rashi's not addressing. I mean, Tosfos is addressing because he has other issues, and I mean, this classic Rashi is just dealing with what's in front of him here on the daf. Maybe Tosfos is trying to expand and look at things in a broader context.
Mm-hmm.
Rashi is just explaining what the Gemara is saying right here. Not that Tosfos disagrees that these are all ma'aseh b'yadayim over
can't
here.
Can't disagree.
Right. I mean, these are all ma'aseh b'yadayim here. Tosfos is just explaining that the Rabbanan might even agree in certain of these instances. And then he has to come up with a nuanced explanation as to why this mission is only Rabbi Meir. And that's Chachamim. Once I explain that the Chachamim also agree that a psak halacha is considered final and that you're chayav in those instances. So he comes up with this nuanced explanation of depends on what type of psak halacha. If it's an irreversible psak halacha, then you're right. The Chachamim agree. That's a ma'aseh and dibur k'maaseh. It's a reversible psak, then that's not considered dibur k'maaseh unless you do a ma'aseh b'yadayim. Unless you're specifically doing it. Hi, Rabbi Meir. So which Rabbi Meir are we talking about? It's not. Our Mishnah coming out the Tzvolo Adom, right? He asked him to make it red. The Tzvolo Shachor, he made it black. Shachor, the Tzvolo Adom. That he said, do it, make it black. He made it red. Or Meir Omer, who's in the Dmei Tzmaro, right there. He pays up the Dmei Tzemer. So again, that's a not a Ma'aseh B'Yadayim. It sounds like. So why isn't it a Ma'aseh B'Yadayim? But he's putting in there. So he says, no. It's where it says, well, so Hatam Ami Ka'Aved Ma'Dayim. He's doing B'Yadayim. That's what we saw in Rashi yesterday. And the Gemara made that assumption that in the Mishnah it's a ma'aseh b'yadayim. Now Rashi has to say the reason it's a ma'aseh b'yadayim galu mineh is because it's kagam lishnot. Right? He intentionally changes it. By intentionally changing it, he's doing a ma'aseh b'yadayim to dye it the wrong way. Because he's doing it with intent. Tosfos over here seems to indicate that it's not, that's not the case. Here he says that the dye does not take hold for 2 or 3 days. Right, it takes time for a dye to capture it or be captured by the wool itself. It's not like you put it in there and the dye is collated right away. The dye goes into the clothing right away. Right, and then the Gemara answers up with the very mashabi a dime of it. He's actually doing it physically by placing it into the cauldron and mixing it and doing that. That's classified as a ma'aseh b'yadayim, even though it takes time for the dye to take hold. That's what the Havim means. The Havim of the Gemara is that this shouldn't be a ma'aseh b'yadayim because it takes time for the dye to take hold. It's classified, yes, as a ma'aseh b'yadayim because I mixed it and I pushed it in. That's classified enough to be a ma'aseh b'yadayim.
Even
if there's a delay in the tzema being kolayt.
Right.
So the question is then, why is it a dime? So Rashi says it's a dime because it's kavin lishnot, that it intends to change. You could even say, according to Tosfos, it's not kavin lishnot, but rather the mere fact that you put it in the wrong vat. That is the ma'aseh b'yadayim, and that causes the difference of
view. Even unintentionally.
But yes, even
unintentionally. If you think, if you do it unintentionally,
combined with
that, it takes 3 days. Right. Rashi
was.
Rashi's
not willing to accept that. Rashi's not willing to accept that.
Tosfos, of course, is better
than Zen. It's true. Ha Rabbi Meir, let's do this. Rabbi Meir, the son of Masachai, Kupano, Agabei, Kupato, Shokhaviro. So he's talking about Kilei Akerem here. Kilei Akerem, he takes his Gevin. And he puts it all on top of his friend's, food, his grains and stuff like that. Harzeh kidesh, he made his friend's stuff into kilayim v'chayav, and he is chayav. So Marzeh says, "Hazanami kavi biyadayim." Over there, he's also doing biyadayim. He's placing the vine on top of the tzvuah at the mitzvah biyadayim, and that's kilei akerem. So you can't make a claim from that. There, we don't know anything about dinei degarmi. Elahar, Rabbi Meir. But with this Rabbi Meir de Tanya, we have a brisa mechitza bekerem shenifritza. You have a fence that exists between two people's houses, or two people's fields. In one field is planted tvu'a, and the other field is planted kerem, is planted a vineyard. So it comes to, when there is a fence between the two fields, you can plant the tvu'a all the way up to the wall, right up to the fence, and you don't have to leave any spacing, and the kerem can be on the other side. Now, if the fence falls, now you have a problem, because the kerem and the tvu'a are too proximate, and therefore we're going to have a problem of kilei kerem. So now you have a problem of kilei kerem, because they're growing now with the fence broken down. This is what happened here. So the fence fell down, there was a mechitza of kerem, there was a mechitza between them, and it broke down. Omer ler gedor. We say to him, fence it up again. We say to the bala vineyard, go ahead and fence it up. Nifritza, it broke again. Omer ler gedor. Says, fix it up again. Nitiyayish mimeno, if he says, no, I'm done, I'm not fixing it up anymore, and he leaves it, v'lo gadra, and then he doesn't fence it up, and then it grows more than 1/200, harzeh kiddush. That causes the tvu'ah to be kadosh, or meaning kadosh in the negative sense, that is causes it to be kilaya keren, keren, v'chayah v'achrayoto. And the bala keren now has to compensate the bala tvu'ah for the damage that he did. So now the first question we have to answer is, why is it that the obligation is on the bala kerem defense and not on the bala tvu'ah defense? You have a fence that sits between the two fields, they're both in a problem now that the tvu'ah and the kerem are too close. Why are we obligating the bala kerem to do it and not the bala tvu'ah? And then if you do it, why is it that you need distance between tvu'ah and kerem? It's because a kerem requires what's called a budat kerem. What we determine the distance between what a kerem and other foods in tvu'ah has to do with a budat kerem. So the obligation to give space is what we call avodat kerem, so he doesn't go into the tvu'ah to do work on the kerem, which would be the problem with the kerem. So when he has a fence there, we don't have that problem. As soon as the fence falls down, the avodat kerem is going to make him go into the field or into the tvu'ah. If that's the case, right, it's really the bala kerem who is the one who is causing the problem here. If he's the one causing the problem, we obligate him to fence it up. Now, the second issue is, why does he say to him multiple times, right, go ahead, Gedor, and then he gives up and he doesn't Gedor. Is there any significance to the number of times that he's saying, the two or the three times he says, that was my focus in the Rabbeinu Tam and the Reef, what the significance of this whole expression here is? The Reef says that you have to warn him. Every time you have to warn him. If you do not warn him, he's not responsible for that which grows. We don't just say to him at every moment, he's got to be looking at his field, figuring out that there's something wrong. So if we warn him, your fence is down, so it's going to cause kilei kerem to grow, then he is obligated. So that's what the Brice is after showing you, that you have to take the door. Each time you have to say to him, go fence it. Only if you say to him, go fence it, would he be responsible if he doesn't.
Why do you repeat it? Why is it happening twice?
All right, so that's a nifritza, so that each time it does. Now, pam shlishit, mispekelei the reed, im tzarech lahat v'lpo b'chol pam, v'shem esagim v'trei zimnei. That is the reed says. Reed, safek here is then, when it comes to the third time, that you have to actually warn him. I mean, he did enough to warn him twice, and then by the time third time comes around, he should be aware that his fence is falling down, it's coming around, their piece is falling around, and that is it. Or no, maybe you have to warn him every single time in order for him to be chayav. That's the reason. The fake, and that's what the reason is going on in this braisa. Why there are multiple times. First, they'll teach you, you have to warn him each time. And the question is, on the third time, do you have to continue to warn him, or no, maybe by the third time already he should know. The Rabbeinu Tam gives a very interesting explanation, and he says the reason that the Mishnah has multiple times is to show you that they're not mitzgarif. That they're not mitzgarif. If the fence falls and it grows 1/400th more, which is not mikadesh the kilei kerem, then he fences it up, and then another piece of fence falls down again, or another piece of fence falls down, it grows another 1/400th. So together there would be 1/200th that should be mikadesh. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. No, that comes to teach you that each falling of the wall, each separation of the wall, separate ma'aseh and kama batil. Each one of them is batel. Each one. Once you megader the wall, then it's batel with the rope that's there. Right, right. Even though it doesn't grow anymore, it's kama batel. And then the rest of that Tosfos, we don't get into it, but the Tosfos has to discuss how it's different than other cases of kama batel. When do we say kama batel? When do we not say kama batel? Because certain times we say that, oh, you know, when you pour something in, it's kama batel. Other times, right, when we just say something, they don't say kama, like for instance, if the fence was left open here, first it grows 1/400th, then it grows 1/200th. How come here you don't say kama batel?
That's where you grow.
Oh, very good. That's exactly where Rabbeinu Tam says, Bereb and Meir. This is what he quotes here. There are three brothers.
There would never be anything.
Exactly. Very good. So there are actually three brothers. Rabbi Meir is the son-in-law of Rashi. He's married to Rashi's daughter. He has three sons, three very chashuv sons. One of them is Rav Yaakov. One of them is Rav Shlomo. And one of them is Rav Yitzchak. So now, he has the Rav Yaakov ben Meir, is otherwise known as the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Shlomo ben Meir is otherwise known as the
Rashbam.
And they have a third brother, who is Rav Yitzchak ben Meir. Right? It's not, I don't think it's not the Re, I don't think it's the Re that's
meant to
be, right, it's a different Re. Because they always, it's supposed to be from Yitzchak ben Meir. So I think it's a different Re. They quote from Yitzchak ben Meir, right, that he says about the Rabbeinu Tam, that very interesting, the Rashbam was significantly younger than the Rabbeinu Tam. And he actually learned from his older brother, Rabbeinu Tam. He learned under his older brother, Rabbeinu Tam, and his older brother actually brought him up for a period of time. The Re ben Meir, he says, Perish with the Sefer that their natural growth is in that manner. The gadel ma'at ma'at lo batil kamakama. Then we don't say batil kamakama because that's their natural growth. If that's the natural process of their growth, we're not going to say kamakama batil. Other hand, but kamo b'yai nesach. The hatam l'shechem emar halchik. We have nayim nesach in the gut that's pouring into a full thing that is good wine, and then you say kamakama batil because that's not the natural growth. That's not the natural process. He makes the distinction that you quoted, or that you suggested, Joel, that it has to do with, that you only say kama basa when it's an quote-unquote unnatural form of the two coming together. If it's a natural way of growth, or a natural result of what should happen, then we don't say kama basa. But anyway, the Rabbeinu Tam, in the end, says, it's a nice shot here. He said his brother came to explain him more. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Meir explained the Rabbeinu Tam's shot, but the Rabbeinu Tam, it's saying that each time is a separate incident, and if it's a separate incident, then you can say kama kama batil, because once you close up the wall, that's kama kama batil, and then the next time it happens, it's a new incident. Right, new. Next Mishnah. This is the Mishnah that we've been quoting all along.
Three is if you require it a third time, then you require it forever.
Right. Positive. Alright, so now Mishnah. This is the Mishnah we've been quoting all the way along. We know the Mishnah because we quoted it so many times. There's a note that's same as the Zabah. Right, it gives wool to the dyer, v'dichon yoreh, and then the cauldron burns it. V'notein lo, demet maro, v'tzba'o. He has to give him his sever and the color, right? Because he has damaged the tzemer and the tzeva. Now, t'or, demet maro. He has to give him the value of the tzemer. Tzba'o t'or. Right now, if he colored it, but he colored it in a poor manner. Now, ko'or, it's not clear here what the ko'or is. The Gemara is asking what ko'or is. And Rashi quotes the Gemara, which is from the word with the ayin, ku'ur, ka'ur, which is disgusting or ugly, right, mekhu'ar, that he used the shari hatseva. That's what Rashi says. He used the leftover dye that was at the bottom of the barrel. He used the sediment, not the good dye. He used a lower quality of dye here. So, in this case, if the improvement in the wool from this lighter form of dye is worth more than the quat of the dye that he put in there, then all he has to compensate for is quat, and then he takes the dye back with the color in it. On the other hand, if the expenditures are higher than the shevach, he just has to compensate the worker for the shevach. He gives him the lower, right, of the shevach, or the yitziah, he pays him. Why is yitziah al tachtona here? Rashi says is that he's a mazik b'kavana. Rashi calls him that the dyer here is a mazik b'kavana because he uses this lower grade, lower quality seva, and therefore he has no choice over here. Yado al atachtona, he has no choice. Now with v'alo adom b'smol shachor, as he do red, he does black shachor, black with adom, and then he does it red. Rabbi Meir Omer notein lo d'meis maro. Rabbi Meir says you only give him the tamer. There's a shinoi here. Once you have a shinoi, he's a gazlan, and he has to pay. Right, kishatak zela. So what does he pay him? Shatak zela is semer, and that's all he pays him back for. Is have to pay him back for anything else. Yudamer imish shevach yeter la yitziyah. If the shevach and the semer now is worth more, then he pays him what? No, tein lo et yitziyah. Then he gives him the expenditures. V'im yitziyah yeterah la shevach. If the yitziyah, the expenditures are higher than the quality or improvement that he gave here. No, tein lo et shevach. He gives him the shevach. So he gives him the lower of the two, right? The lower of the two again. So again, Rabbi Meir believes that he's kone b'shinoi, and that's b'keshat and zela. That's why he only pays to make temer. And the improvement of the wool afterwards belongs to the gazlan, belongs to the craftsman. He keeps the new wool, just pays him back wool that's ready to be dyed. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says no. There's a knas, as we saw earlier. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there's a knas here. That the, even though he changed it, we don't want the craftsman changing and then benefiting to keep this wool. Now he's got the wool that's dyed and he's got this better quality everything. We say, no, there's a knas here that he has to pay back not only the wool, but he's got to pay back the wool with the dye in it. And then the person who gave him the wool to dye will pay him the lower of the expenditures or the shevach. Because he can go now and resell this item for that equivalent value. So he's just paying him for the exact value he gave him. Rashi points out that there's a third possibility here that he just pays him for scharo, right, whatever his wages are. I mean, that out of the three items, it's wages, expenditures, or improvement. Whichever is the lowest of those three, he can choose to pay any of those three, because the yadua tachtona, the craftsman, is on the low end of the stick here because he changed. He went ahead and changed it. Once he changed it, we're koneh to him, and he gets the baal habayit. We'll only pay him the lower of those three items.
So Rabbi Yehuda's problem is that if we left it like Rabbi Meir,
there would be no disincentive to the craftsman. If he needed some wool that was dyed the other color, he'd just go ahead and make mishaned, and he would keep the paying back the wool later, and he'd be, you know, get the wool that he needed in the color that he needed. There's no disincentive.
It's a forced sale from the craftsman.
Right. So my kior, what's kior? That's what he explained in the Mishnah. My kior, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bechana, kabus. So my kabus, what's a kabus? Amar Rabbi Bar Shmuel, kafra dudi. So what's kafra dudi? So Rashi says, kineach bota yoret. You clean off it's the stuff that you clean out the cauldron with. Gomar, bishayere teva, shnishtaru bi yoret. The leftover sediment, the law that died at the bottom of the barrel. So kufra lashon kinuach. Kufra is a lashon of kinuach, meaning a dessert, so you know, or a leftover, right, the end. Right, that's the part of Machmir B'choshoftin. That's it. Rashi explains it over here. Rashi, actually, in other places, in Zibuchim, and actually Rashi on the Torah, explains that kapara, the word kufra, comes from the word to wipe off or to, right, remove on the hand. Because with the dam, when you just feel the dam that you rub on the side of the kaparot, hazahav. Why are they called the kaparot hazahav that holds the dam? It's because when you dip into to do the dam, you wipe the finger, you wipe your hands up off on the side of the cauldron or the item, or the makzik, the kli that makzik the dam. So over there you call kufra or kapara to mean something where you wipe yourself off, that you remove it off. Over here you're talking about the leftovers of the sediment at the bottom. Not sure that they're so different, and again, because when he wipes his finger off on the side, that again is the leftover dye, the other dye that he put in, then he pulls it out from the side, he wipes it on the side, that's the leftover dye. Either way, it's not the highest quality dye, he's using a lower quality dye. And this is the end of the end.